His eyes turned bleak and hard as he remembered his own fleet's endless voyage to its final catastrophic meeting with the Royal Carisian Navy. The Dalaran Navy's galleys had been designed for inshore waters, not for the sort of blue water crossing which had been demanded of them. They'd been shorter than most of the heavier Carisian galleys, and their drafts had been much shallower, even for their size. As a result, they displaced little more than half or a third as much as a Carisian galley. That had made them much faster and more maneuverable under oars, of course, as long as their bottoms were reasonably clean. But it also left them far less stable under sail, which meant they could carry less of it, and far more vulnerable to even average conditions on the open sea, which meant that, except under oars, which meant anywhere outside coastal waters, they were actually slower and less maneuverable. The Carisians' galleys weren't really designed to move under oars at all, except in comms or to maneuver once combat was actually joined. They were designed primarily as sailing vessels, with oars to provide auxiliary power, to give them additional speed under sail, to help them accelerate, to get them around onto a new tack more rapidly. In calm conditions, they were at a serious maneuvering disadvantage. In typical blue water conditions, the advantage flipped entirely to their side. Duke Malachi's flagship, King Ronild, had been the biggest ship in the entire Dalaran Navy. She'd been almost as long as Baron Whiteford's Taroisian flagship, and stood far higher out of the water, yet her displacement, huge for the Dalaran Navy, had been little more than half that of Whiteford's flagship. Even Whiteford's ship had been lighter and shallower draft than the majority of the Royal Carisian Navy's galleys, and the Carisian galleons were deeper draft still, which not only made them even more seaworthy, but created ideal platforms for the new Carisian-style artillery. Speed and maneuverability under oars, like high fighting castles, had proved useless in combat against the galleon's far heavier broadsides and greater seaworthiness. For that matter, Thirsk was positive that at least a dozen, and probably more, of the ships Malachi had lost had foundered primarily because they simply had no business making an ocean crossing. So if the new designs were at least a little more seaworthy, so much the better.
"Unfortunately, that only means they'll stay afloat long enough for the Carisians to turn them all into driftwood." "It's nothing to sneeze at," he repeated. "But it's not enough, either. Remember, we aren't the only fleet Caleb smashed."
"No, we're not. But as far as I know, we still don't have any reliable reports about what happened to Blackwater and Earl Mondeer."
Thirsk grunted.
That was true enough, unfortunately.
"You're right," he said. "And I suppose it says something for the Group of Four's decisiveness, at any rate, that they've already arranged their new building program, even if it is the wrong program. It's too bad they didn't wait to read the reports first, though."
The existence of the Church's semaphore system had allowed the Group of Four to issue the various kingdoms and empires' orders with a speed no purely secular realm could have matched. It was an advantage which had served the Church and the Group of Four well over the years, as Thirsk was well aware. In this case, though, that speed was actually working against them. They'd launched what had to be the biggest single shipbuilding program in the history of the world, and they were building the wrong ships. God only knew how much money and, even more importantly, time and skilled labor they'd already squandered buying ships which were going to be worse than useless under the new conditions of sea warfare. The fact was that the Church could probably afford the financial consequences, but if the Knights of the Temple Lands persisted in ignoring Thirsk's own reports, they were going to get an unholy number of other people's seamen and marines slaughtered by the Royal Carisian Navy.
and I can't convince a single one of them to even read my damned reports," the Earl thought despairingly. "Being proved right in the end is going to be damned cold comfort." "Well, Powell," he said finally, "all we can do is try our best. I know it seems unlikely, but if I keep shouting loud enough, long enough, maybe someone will actually end up listening to me. I'm sure something more unlikely must have happened somewhere in the world since the creation."
Holland chuckled dutifully at Thirsk's feeble joke, but the Earl himself didn't feel at all like laughing.
"There are times," he thought, "when it's really, really hard to go on believing God is on our side."
Of course, that was a thought he dared not express even to Holland. In fact, it was one he would have preferred not expressing even to himself.